Blog Talk Radio.
Tuesday night, it's Race Chat Live. Glad to have y'all on board here tonight. We've got a whole lot of discussions to go on. Of course, it's our bad for not being on last week. We'll try to make the show twice as good this week. So, you know, it seems to be, first of all, RCL, it's Race Chat Live. That's what we do. We come on here and we chat about racing. We claim to be the motorsports marquee, right? Like, we cover all things motorsports. But typically what seems to happen in most of our shows is we predominantly cover NASCAR. And that's because it's so much easier to jump on somebody's ass for how they race or whatever. Our opinions can be strong for people who are paid millions of dollars or with the potential to make millions of dollars in the racing business. So when we do talk about racing, most of the time we stay on the subject of NASCAR. We do talk a little IndyCar every now and then, or maybe a little bit of Formula One, just very little. But it's predominantly NASCAR. Well, one thing that we don't talk much about on this show is dirt track racing. And there's kind of a couple of reasons for that. Reason number one, I work in the industry, and I'd be darned if I'm going to sit on my soapbox or our soapbox, Taz Taylor and I, and use it to disgrade, downgrade, or put down anything that involves dirt track racing. I love dirt track racing. I love the people that are involved in it. I love the atmosphere. I love everything about dirt track racing. I have no problem coming on here talking about when Jonathan Davenport wins another Lucas Oil Championship, or Ricky Thornton Jr. And his dominating seasons or anything like that. But most of the time, we stay on the NASCAR side, and there's just reasons for that. So, today, breaking news, Bobby Pierce gets busted with tire doping, okay? And it has the entire dirt world upside down. Now, here's the one thing that I believe in the dirt track racing scene is you have a lot of loyalists such as I who don't get on here and air dirty laundry. We don't use our platforms to be critical or divisive or, you know, because we are in a privileged situation. Those of us that work within the industry, we understand you don't need to do anything. You don't need to add any embers to the fire that already is created, that's been created with social media and whatnot through dirt track racing. There's plenty of people that are willing to burn a track down at any given time throughout social media on any given day, whether it be Saturday, the day of the race, or Monday when they call a rain out, you know, 5 days early. Look, we've had a lot of rain down here. I wouldn't be surprised if we called it races 5 days early. Let's get back to Bobby Pierce. Bobby Pierce flunked a tire test. He has basically been suspended by the World Racing Group, World of Outlaws. For the time being, I'm not sure exactly what the suspension claims to be, but what I have seen is the whole entire dirt world come upside down. Now, I want to remind everybody real quick, and this is as far as I'm going to go, because I, like I said, I tread lightly in this situation. I'm a member of the industry. I always want to make the industry in good light. I'm going to have a really hard time expressing what it is that I need to express with this, so I will be as blunt and vague as I can be. Cheating in racing has gone on forever. It is the outlaw is what created racing, right? It's the don't call me chicken in Back to the Future. It's you're not first, you're last with Ricky Bobby. It's inbred in us, and we're always looking for the advantage that will give us that first place, because unlike any other sport, you got one winner and 31 or more losers, right? I mean, or, you know, whatever many's in the field of your cars. Now, what I want to remind all the racers and racing community is we don't really know what happened, right? All we know is World of Outlaws put out a thing a few weeks ago saying, hey, don't be putting swimming pools under your tires. Don't be coming into the pits with wraps wrapped around your tires. There was a reason for caution. There was a reason why these statements were given. Now, here we are on Tuesday afternoon, March, 12th, and the entire world is upside down. The entire racing industry in the dirt track world is upside down because Bobby Pierce failed a tire inspection, a tire sample. Now, if any of you are following us and you go to your local dirt tracks and you've had big series races, this is common ground. This is one of the more anticipated, more acceptable failures, right? This is not a big motor. This is not a big carburetor. You know, but it's something that I believe that has gone on in racing for a very long time. That's just, you know, people have done some things at times to add a little substance to these tires. Once again, I want to tread lightly in this situation because I just want to make sure that we're all bringing to light that racing is a competitive sport, and there are times and places where people have tried to take advantage of that. And whether or not you sit here today and you find yourself believing that Bobby Pierce is a cheater, let's just understand where we are at in racing, right, and what racing has become over the years. Look, in every sport from football to hockey, if you take PEDs, you're a cheater, and that's fine and dandy. We're keeping people out of the Major League Baseball Hall of Fame today. Some of the best hitters and pitchers that I've seen in my era are not allowed into the Baseball Hall of Fame because baseball made a statement. They said, we're not going to allow this in our sport. Look, we're just now at that cusp in dirt track racing, right? We're just now there where even in cup racing, right? I mean, we went from, and this is how it correlates with NASCAR, right? Because up until a few years ago, we had a car that you like to fool with, and I know Jimmy Johnson won 5 out of his 6 championships. Sorry, Taz Taylor, that, you know, he's won 5 out of his 6 championships from cheating, right? But now today in the racing world, we are wanting to sacrifice the lamb because Bobby got busted with cheater tires. All of a sudden, everybody in the world has a comment to say about Bobby Pierce's illegal tires. But we don't know other than that he flunked the lab test. Now, hey, you know, it's a sad story when you have a kinfolk who may have taken a store dummy and had to take a pee test and flunked it. Does that make that person a drug addict? No, it doesn't. It doesn't make Bobby Pierce a cheater either, right? Even if somehow, some way, some substance found on those tires were not a compound, we don't know if the goat peed on the tire or if it rolled through something in the pit. All we do know is that a few weeks ago, World of Outlaws come down with some pretty strict rules on how they wanted these tires treated, how they wanted to make sure that there could be nothing on these tires. And Bobby Pierce happens to be the first victim. Race fans, chill out. The world is not ending. It's okay. Bobby Pierce should not be, his entire integrity, the family, the mother is even coming to Facebook defending her child, right? Slow the hell down, dirt race fans, right? We're okay. It's okay. It's just a bad tire, right? Calm down, everybody. It's going to be all right. The integrity of racing is going to be fine. Bobby Pierce can still make the Dirt Track Hall of Fame if there is one. We're not going to just stop being Bobby Pierce fans today because something happened on the track. Look, at your given track, Taz Taylor, I know you're ready to top on this one. This is not how we normally start the show out, but my goodness gracious, when we say we are the leader in motorsports news, this is the news topic today. Come on in, Taz Taylor. Help me out. Have I said anything wrong so far?
Oh, no, there's tires. I mean, I'm more into the go-karting side of things, and the biggest thing in karting right now, and especially up here in New York, is tire tests. Not really tire tests, but the tire game. A lot of go-kart teams and classes that run in the dirt run on slicks, and when it comes to tire prep, it goes down to washing, being a chemist, putting the right chemicals on, mixing your rubber with certain chemicals, this, that, blah, blah, blah. Well, some people in karting, in kind of like in dirt track racing, when people, you know, complain and hem and haw about certain things, and somebody changes it, all of a sudden it's a big deal. And I feel like that's what World of Outlaws kind of ran into. Here in New York, especially with the track I'll be head flagging at this year, one of their classes is going to be running a certain brand tire, and you are only going to use that one set of tire, and it's going to be a dirty tire rule, meaning you can't clean, wash, put any chemicals in it. We're trying to eliminate some of the tire game to try to balance out who the real drivers are from who the chemists are in the tire game. And when somebody did that, all of a sudden people, the world erupted. And I feel like in a similar way, the World of Outlaws with this tire test and Bobby Pierce, we're running into that problem. And I believe that with World of Outlaws, I'm not a huge World of Outlaws fan, World Racing Group person, and that's not saying I don't like them, I despise what they're doing. No, I am a fan. I'm just not huge into it. But when you have a set of rules on tires, saying okay, we're running on the right side, you're running this compound, left side, you're running this compound, you're allowed to grind, sipe, if you want to wash your tires, it's soap and water. If you want to use a cleaner, you're only allowed, if you want to use a cleaner, you can use that, but that's where I'm going with it.
Not like, 3 hours before the race. All that has been prohibited now, 3 hours before the race.
Right.
Yeah, that's a statement that came out about a month or so ago, right? No more coming into the racetrack and doing these things to the tires, like that. And that may be on the substance of what we're talking about, you know, with Bobby Pierce. Something, he could have put Dawn on the freaking tires. It doesn't necessarily mean he put dope on the tires, right? And Taz, you brought up a great point. Go-kart racing, it is. You're not going to win a go-kart race if you didn't soak your tires, okay? Because that's just the way that the culture is there. And go-karts, look, there's been even in NASCAR, whispers of people doping tires, right? It's the biggest sin in the world, but yet it still seems to happen. What happened here is somebody got caught with something or something that wasn't on the tire, right? And that goes, we don't know what it is. So before we go hanging the banners, before we go jumping off the cliffs, before Mama gets on here defending her baby, let's slow down a minute. It's dirt track racing. It's racing. Sometimes things happen. Sometimes, and I'm not condoning it. Look, there's nothing worse than a guy who busted his ass and did everything right and finished second, and the guy who finished first was doing something that was illegal, right? That's heartbreaking for the sport. And that's something that I feel like we're getting closer and closer to, right, Taz Taylor? Because through six championships, right, with Jimmy Johnson, it was understood that cheating was okay in racing, right?
Seven.
You're a Jimmy Johnson fan, right? I mean, that's how you know Mama's sitting here shaking her head. No, I'm wrong
seven
for that statement. Well, but he didn't win all.
Six.
Win those all second, right? Yeah, it was straight six there. So but he had to have cheated to do that test. It was damn possible. But anyway, now all of a sudden, as we're in this woke world that we're in, and everybody's acting like, you know, that their carburetor is just where it's supposed to be, that their spoiler isn't maybe, you know, hinged up a tad bit here, or the front end of their car isn't lowered a little bit lower than it should be. And look, I mean, all these things are getting caught, right? So why are we jumping off the cliff? When Scott Blomquist went out there with a different type of what was that thing for the car, the door? What is that thing called? I hate this. The window net, and got thrown out for the window net. The whole dirt world turned upside down. Well, you know that the window net was only there because it was a FU to Lucas Oil. It was a FU to the officials. This could have possibly have been a laughing joke FU. Oh, we'll just throw a little dawn or something on the tires, and we'll see what happens, right? Well, guess what? We've seen what happened. So, I cannot defend Bobby Pierce today, right? Because the integrity of the sport matters to me. But what I can say is, y'all, let's get over it, right? Let's move on. Let's not make this a big deal. It is no reason to take a simple tire sample that come back as non-conform to what it was supposed to test for. It happens, and it's going to happen again. So before we start pushing the panic button or jumping off cliffs, let's just understand that it happens in NASCAR all the time, even still today. It happens. People push the limits. That is what racing is. Good officiating, they'll figure it out and they'll stop it, because guess what? The next guy, unfortunately, Bobby Pierce is that guy today. Right? But the next guy, he's going to make sure, holy crap, I'm not going to put myself in that position to get busted because Bobby Pierce looks like an idiot. And I'm not saying personally that Bobby Pierce looks like an idiot. I'm saying that from a racer that's saying, I don't want to be that guy. I don't want to be the center of attention. I'm going to make sure I go to the end of the world not to do this. So we've got that to discuss. I think we've pretty much started that open. 17 minutes. Wow, that is too long for an opening, I swear. Well, let's clap the hands. Tad, you got anything to add to that real quick so we can jump into the NASCAR news?
No, I mean, when it comes to, I mean, I feel like dirt track racing, regardless if it's karting, slingshot racing, big car racing, there's always a tire game involved, and unless you put the rules of what your tires are in black and white, and you put in there, tire samples will be taken at certain times, and it can happen at random. This is where you're going to catch your people who know their tire game and ones who try to sneak their way through and see if they get caught or not. And this is one of those times that they tried sneaking through and didn't get away with it. It happens a lot in the karting world, and unfortunately, there's not so much of the tire test. It's just everyone complains about the tire game, about how a lot of teams that have more money, you can tell when they have 20 sets of tires versus a team who's low budget and only has like 2 sets of tires, and it sucks in the tire game because there's no balance to it. And when you have a, like we said, World of Outlaws has a certain set of rules for their tires. In karting up here in New York, with one of the tracks that's up here that I will be flagging at this year, there's a dirty tire rule where you put on whatever set of tires you put on and you run with in hot laps, unless you have a flat tire, those tires are what's going to be used for your whole race night. You can't do squat. And people are blowing up about it, and you got to make a standard in racing in one way or another. And either way, you're still going to piss people off.
You have to have boundaries, right? You have to have boundaries, and these are the boundaries. And unfortunately, somebody crossed over that crevice just by maybe a small feather, but it's not the end of the world. All right, and that's what we want our listeners to understand. We're not bashing anybody. We're not trying to bring a negative content to the sport. We want people to stop, like, chill out, breathe. It's okay. It's going to happen. It's not the first time that somebody's bunch of tire tests. It's not going to be the last. I'm sure it's pretty big news when it's one of the top guys in the racing world. But it's not like it doesn't happen all the time. What this will do is it'll wake everybody within the garages, within the car pits, and they'll be very careful not to step over that boundary, whatever that boundary may be. Now, let's slap that on to the side, and let's get down to the nitty-gritty. We had a race this weekend in Phoenix in the desert, and there's been a lot of hoopla over whether or not it was a good or bad race. But first of all, Christopher Bell. Christopher Bell has been to Phoenix twice, 2 years in a row now, in that fourth spot for the championship, and twice he's not prevailed at being a champion. First of all, the last 2 years, I would have never put Christopher Bell even in that situation. I wouldn't have picked him to be there at the end. There's so many other drivers that I would have chosen beforehand. Also, Christopher Bell went to a Phoenix test during the winter and blew up the motor, so he didn't even really get any laps in. Well, Christopher Bell comes into Phoenix this weekend. Obviously, the Toyota Camrys were very strong. They looked strong all weekend. They were 1, 2, 3, 4 on the speed charts. They were 1, 2, 3, 4 racing on the speedway. Christopher Bell made a late pass. I think he passed like 20 cars to come all the way from the rear, come all the way from, I think, 20th to win the race. So in a race where they said that it wasn't very much passing, it was hard to pass and whatnot, Christopher Bell obviously did not have those worries when he was in victory lane Sunday night. Now, was it a good race or was it a bad race? And Christopher Bell, primed for a champion. Let's start with Christopher Bell, primed for a champion. Taz Taylor, has he learned something? How does this win at Phoenix project itself to November later this year in the 2024 race season?
I think if Christopher Bell can, obviously the playoffs this year look different than what we have seen in the last 3 years. I want to get into Phoenix, but if Christopher Bell can manage to get through some of these wild rounds of the playoffs and get him to Phoenix, I think he can easily be a favorite to not only win the race, but the championship. Something clicked with the Toyotas, especially Christopher Bell. It seems like, though, with Christopher Bell, I have noticed is that he succeeds better in the tracks that are low, that have little to no banking, if you've noticed, Chris, because he's also won at Martinsville. I'm trying to think some of his other wins. There was the Daytona Road Course, which, I mean, doesn't really have any, which, again, little to no banking, really, on that track, minus, you know, the Daytona Oval corners. I mean, it seems like Christopher Bell has found something on these little to no banking type of tracks. I would like to see him have a little bit more success on tracks like, let's say, Las Vegas, or Talladega, Daytona. And, I mean, I know those tracks are basically lottery-style type tracks, like pick a name out of a hat and there's your winner, pretty much. But I think Christopher Bell, if he plays his cards right and improves where he's been struggling the last few years, he can easily be another Kyle Larson, pretty much, and be a championship favorite going in. I honestly feel like Christopher Bell and Kyle Larson are today's versions, and this is weird to say it, but I don't know how else to really put it, are today's versions of Dale Sr. versus Jeff Gordon. You have some of the two best talented drivers in this generation, who you can put them behind the wheel of a car and you can't be surprised that they're running up front. You put Larson and Christopher Bell in a cup car, they're running up front. You you're lucky if you see them outside of the top 10. You put them in a midget or a sprint car, you're going to see them running up front and not surprised either. Those two have the genuine driver craft. And as long as they have the equipment behind them, they're going to put themselves in situations to not only run well, but try to win the race. And I do believe Christopher Bell can easily be a championship favorite if he can put himself in situations where he needs to improve, where he's struggling. If you remember last year, William Byron, his main struggle point was trying to win races outside of the first five races of the season. William Byron did that, and he potentially had a breakout year. Christopher Bell, if he can find his main weak points and improve on them and start competing for top fives and wins every week, he's going to have that breakthrough year. And I made an early season call, as you remember, Chris. I think if there was a driver that needed a breakout year this year, it's going to be Christopher Bell. And I think he has I believe he has all the potential, the tools, and the crew behind him to do it.
Yeah. Well, I tell you, I'm so surprised. I'm getting conflicting results. Seven career wins is what I've got, but I'm also looking at eight career wins. But this one's saying that he's got two wins this season, and we know that that's not true. There's not been a single driver to win multiple times this year, but it does say 2023 he won two races. In 2022 he won three races, and then one race in 2021. So it has seven total races that I know of in his career. So, you know, I think that by far catches me by surprise. I think he's already got more Cup Series wins than Clint Bowyer does. So, you know, it just shows that Christopher Bell has only been here a short time, but he's already, as you said, you know, gaining the respect in the garage as a top a driver in the Cup Series. So I do think that he's primed for a championship. I wouldn't be surprised to see him get one before his teammate, Denny Hamlin.
We should think Kyle Busch. Where Christopher Bell was before trucks, I'm not fully sure. So if he ran ARCA, say with Gibbs, okay, we can thank Gibbs for that one. But in all honesty, I think Christopher Bell should be thanking Kyle Busch. Because I think if Bell wasn't with Kyle Busch to start and give him the starting tools and the team and the confidence behind him, I think we wouldn't be talking about Christopher Bell today. And Christopher
right.
Bell, too, Christopher Bell, if you think about it, he's one driver that was not rushed at all, and I feel like he was timely put into when he moved up to Xfinity, I think it was the right timing to do so. When he moved up the Cup, it was the right timing to do so. And I know Christopher Bell got a slow start with the Cup Series, but there at that time where he started with the Cup Series, it wasn't anything of his fault. He went over to Levine Family Racing, who aligned themselves with Joe Gibbs. Gibbs had nowhere to put Bell on his own team. And at that point, Bell was pretty much given, well, you're going to run with Levine Family for now. Once the ride opens up, you're going to be hopping in one of our cars. And Bell was all in for buying into the system. And most drivers, and even we can even go outside of racing and go into, like, players in the sport. If you don't buy into the system, you're not going to succeed well. If you buy into the system, you're gonna be one to be talked about.
So I found that he won at Homestead. He's won the dirt race at Bristol. Of course, he said that he won the Roval, and I believe he won Daytona and the road course race. So there's Ambetter 301, which is back in 2022, and that happens to be – New Hampshire. That was a flat track. So good call on that. With the flat track observation, the Xfinity 500, I believe that one is Martinsville. So he's won at several flat tracks. You know, I don't know. He may be high on the radar coming for this upcoming race at Bristol this weekend. So, yeah, looking at the stats there, man, I tell you, Christopher Bell should be on everybody's radar, and including Vegas's radar, for a potential championship run for this young man. And it's time for him to prime, right? We watched William Byron. We watched him struggle. We watched him starting to get better. Now we're watching him critique. The same thing with Christopher Bell. Now let's go ahead and jump over into the next topic real quick, Taz Taylor, because we've got a lot to cover in a short time to get there. A lot of people, I think it was Jeff Gluck's poll, 59% did not enjoy the race at Phoenix. I will be the first to claim that through most of the cautions and stuff, I was doing things. I had the radio in my ear, so I was able to follow along with that. But all in all, MRN made it sound like a pretty good race. Now, I did get to come inside and watch the last 45 laps, I think it was. Basically, there was no cautions after that, I don't think. And Christopher Bell pretty much cruised control all the way to the front. Now, what the cameras didn't catch was Christopher Bell coming from the rear, coming from 20th all the way to first, because they, you know, once again, we've got this bad camera that only shows two cars running through, you know, the entire Cup Series race every weekend. So until Fox figures out that they need somebody pointing out where the battles are and who's moving up towards the front, you know, that's things that just have got to be done better with broadcasting. If you were following along on MRN radio, I believe that you had a great experience and you could really tell how racy the race was. The drivers are saying that there wasn't much of an impact between the new package that they have. Obviously, I feel like with Christopher Bell coming all the way from 20th to 1st, it had to have been a little bit easier to pass than what some are claiming. Now, once again, they're saying it's because of horsepower, horsepower, horsepower. I keep hearing this word over and over and over again, horsepower, horsepower. We need more horsepower. I don't think we need more horsepower, Taz Taylor. Horsepower is not the answer. I want to get your take on whether you think adding more horsepower would make everybody's dreams come true, because I think if you've been around racing long enough, you're going to answer this a certain way. Go ahead.
I know this is a new package for these smaller tracks that they're running. I don't necessarily know if horsepower truly is the right answer in terms of trying to make better racing. For me, I think it just depends on the track and how the weather is around the track. Like Phoenix is one of those hot areas in terms of weather wise. And with how track temperatures can be with Phoenix, well, you're either going to get a slick racetrack or you can get a very grippy track depending on the weather-wise. And Phoenix, I feel like, has gotten better over time, but I don't think it's the most amazing thing. I think we've seen better races at better tracks. I mean, Bristol for the longest time, Bristol has always been one of those entertaining tracks. But ever since they brought in this next-gen car, the package kind of lacks. And then it seems like they're in the right stride, because I believe we've seen more passing this time around. And I think a lot of people are on the case of jumping the gun on this after one race of this new package. I personally think we need to give this package more of a legit chance. We're going to Bristol this weekend.
And
we're
not racing.
What's that?
They're not racing the short track package at Bristol.
Oh, they're
not? I don't know why. No, they're not. And I don't know why, but I think it has a lot to do with the last couple of August races that we actually had at Bristol were pretty good races. Hence the reason why we're not doing the dirt track again this year. So I have a feeling that that's a big reasoning behind it. They want to see, they want to make sure that they're not trying to mess something up that was already kind of fixed itself. So for some reason, I don't have the real answer, but we're not running this package at Bristol.
So if we keep this package, I think we may see it at Richmond and Martinsville. I don't think we'll see it at Circuit of the Americas. Maybe we will. I'll be surprised if we do, but I think if we get a couple more races in with this package, we have more of an idea seeing if NASCAR truly is heading in the right direction. Is horsepower the true answer? Right now, I want to say no, but I'm not going to fade away from it. I don't necessarily think you need horsepower to prove who the better driver is, in my opinion.
Thank you. I understand that what we need is a little fall off from the tires, and I think that that's a big thing. You know, Goodyear, they took a lot of – this is the fault of the fans overreacting. We want to talk about tires with Bobby Pearce, so we're going to talk about tires, right? But, you know, I think when Goodyear first showed up with the tires, they caught a lot of flack. Oh, these tires are terrible. They, you know, so a lot of that was unwanted and unneeded because it was basically the teams going to the extreme guidelines or past the guidelines that Goodyear had set forth. And now Goodyear's scared to bring a tire with any fall off on it because they're afraid that they'll catch the blame of, you know, the reason why the series sucks. And that's a lot to put on a tire company, right? Goodyear does the best that they can, and we've seen great tires being brought to the Xfinity Series. When you're completely changing a car and you're going to have a new tire, the best thing to do is the route that they went and have a tire with less fall off. But now that we've got the car figured out, the best thing to do is for Goodyear to come in and tweak the tire a little bit, give it a little bit of fall off, and we'll find the perfect medium where we have guys who are using strategy throughout the race, because the one thing that you're not going to have is pit strategy when you have a tire that does not fall off. So that's where we're standing with that. Creating more horsepower, you know, it sounds like a great idea, but I remember being on the end that says, hey, we don't need all this horsepower. We need to slow the cars down. We need to give the guys a chance to race each other. And with that, we bought more aero dependency. There is no fine line, Taz Taylor, in how to correct this. We've just got to be able to have a tire that has a little bit of fall off that creates strategy, and then we'll see better racing from that. We're not going to increase. We're not going to, you know, I think the biggest thing with the whole decrease of horsepower has a lot to do with bringing in a new manufacturer, right, and not giving them, you know, a 900-plus horsepower motor that they've got to build and compete with immediately. You can build a standardized 650, 750 horsepower motor without, you know, without, you know, basically going to the extreme. In other words, the more horsepower you build for these motors, the more expensive the parts become, one, and the more frequent you have to rebuild the motors, right? Right now, we're getting two races off of a motor for 650 horsepower. Now, no doubt, 750 may be a little bit better, and a small increase may not hurt that much. But the truth is, increasing horsepower is something that the drivers in their head feel like that they could get an advantage because, like a Denny Hamlin, who's used to the 900 horsepower, there is a whole row of drivers now, Taz Taylor, in the last 10 years that have come in on crate motors. And you know what a crate motor is. Any of y'all that go to dirt track races, I know you've heard the terminology. It's got a damn crate motor in it. It's not an open motor. Well, that's the difference. The crate motor is a sealed motor that you can't mess with, and there's only certain things you can do to it. And an open motor is you built that motor your damn self, and that sucker's got all she can do, right? And that's where we're at. So most of these kids have been raised in a crate motor type atmosphere. You know, they've not had the experience of 900 horsepower underneath them, you know, because very few drivers come out of the super late model divisions in cup racing. Now, where they do come from is sprint cars, and we've, you know, if you caught the any of the sprint car stuff this week with World Racing Group buying AESCS, and also Brian Carter, I believe, was on Kelly Earnhardt's podcast. She was on Dirty Mo Radio. She did a podcast with Brian Carter, who explained where World Racing Group is today and what they're planning to do for tomorrow and stuff. It was great, great, great podcast. Didn't mean to kind of fall off the topic there, but you know, increasing horsepower is a cost thing, and if you're trying to bring in other manufacturers such as Honda. We've heard Honda for the last 2 weeks, Taz Taylor. Honda. Honda could be coming to NASCAR. It's a lot of strain for Honda to have to come out and build a 900-plus horsepower V8 rod-pushing motor, right? Because that's another thing. These motors, they're push rods. They're push rod motors. That's typically not even you don't buy a sports car with push rods. That's just, it just doesn't happen these days. It's the type of car, the type of motor that you have to have. They want to make it easy and not scare off future manufacturers that may be interested into coming into the sport, because they would have to design a high-potency motor. What would happen if Honda showed up tomorrow with a 950-horsepower motor that they didn't have 3, 4, 5 years of investment into to build the motor the correct way, and they come out there and every weekend they're blowing out the rear seal out on the racetrack. They would be the laughing stock of motorsports, right? So NASCAR's fit these guidelines, and I believe that they're going to stay there, and it's okay. A race fan can't tell the difference in 5 miles an hour on the speed track. You go to Talladega, honey. We've been going to Talladega for 12 years. Do those cars look like they go any slower? She's shaking her head no. I promise you she's shaking her head no. You can't tell. Okay, so she didn't really shake her head at all. She's not even in the room. But the fact of it is no. You know what? I'm talking to nobody over here, right? But that you can't tell with the naked eye that a car is going 5 miles an hour slower. And, yes, my wife is sitting here. I just tried to exclude her because she acted like she didn't want to be part of the conversation. Outside of that, Taz Taylor, any last comments? To the increase of horsepower, also I dropped in there Honda to NASCAR. What are your thoughts on that?
Like I said, horsepower, right now with the new package, I don't know if horsepower is the answer. We're only one race into this new package. I don't want to be jumping the gun. I want to give it a couple more chance. I want to give it like 2 or 3 more races with it just to see if horsepower really is the answer. To me, in my opinion, I don't think horsepower really is the answer, because all you're doing is adding speed to a car. And to me, right, when you add speed to a car, you're not really giving the drivers any skill. You're giving all 36 of these drivers an extra 50 to 100 horsepower, which means they can go another 20 to 30 miles an hour faster. That you're not opening up the question of who's the better driver with this package on certain tracks. You're not answering that question. In terms of Honda, I'm not surprised that they're trying to pop their nose into the equation of getting into NASCAR. I mean, they're into IndyCar. Honda has been in IndyCar, obviously. Honda has also been in different forms of racing, like rallycross, for instance. So, I mean, it's no surprise that they're trying to enter the conversation of NASCAR. NASCAR, for quite some time, ever since Dodge left, has been looking for a fourth manufacturer, fourth OEM, whatever you want to call it. Obviously, Dodge was not the answer. Pontiac was not the answer. Maybe Honda can be.
Right.
So,
let's stop with that right there.
Question remains with Honda. What car would they go with? Because Toyota has the Camry. That's their, I guess, their sport.
Go the
type of car. Chevy has the Camaro, and God only knows where they're going to go when the Camaro stops, and Ford has the Mustang. Honda, what their sporty type of cars? Could it be
first
a
of all,
Civic?
They have a Civic, which is really, really a sporty Civic. They and that would be a great car, but I believe that they would go with their top selling brand. That is the Honda Accord. And I guess, you know, would they make a two-door Accord? They have in the past, I believe. I don't know if it was called the Accord, but I do remember a two-door. Maybe it was a Civic, souped-up Civic. But, you know, look, I don't want to just stop with Honda either, Taz. I want other manufacturers to come in. But if we treat Honda the same way that we've treated Toyota over the last 10, 15 years, I don't know if Honda would want to come to our sport, right? Because everybody always to this day says, well, Toyota doesn't belong. Toyota doesn't belong. They're a Japanese company. This is American sport. You know, are we going to treat Honda that way when they come in? Is that how we're going to treat our new friends? You know, and Honda has to be looking at the negative context that was created when Toyota come to NASCAR. Toyota to this day
right.
is the black sheep of NASCAR because all you know, there's a whole bunch of damn Chevy fans out there. Us Ford fans, we're cool with being in the room with other people of different manufacturers. You know, we're like Southern people. We ain't as bad as what you think we are, you know. We be in the room with all kind of different folks. That's the way a Ford fan is, right? He doesn't care that you drive a Chevy. He doesn't care that you drive a Dodge. He's just going to put his Ford first, you know, first on race day. You know, you got these Chevy haters who, oh, Toyota's cheating them Toyotas, boy. I tell you what, they don't belong in that car. You know, well, is that how we're going to treat Honda when Honda comes in and makes a $1 billion freaking investment into our sport? No, we don't need to treat them like that. So if Honda is coming to our sport, and this was my opening rant last week that I didn't get to have, if Honda is coming to the sport, we need to make sure we're treating them not only with open arms, but a little bit of dignity and respect. We should appreciate a manufacturer that is interested in our sport. And if they're given four charters to create, you know, a racing development program, so be it. And I hope the name on the shop is Junior Motorsports driving a Honda. I really do.
Oh God,
I really do. If Junior, if he was smart, he would do it. He would do it. He would say, "Whatever you need, Honda. I know Chevrolet's been my baby, and I know it was my daddy's car, but this is no longer my daddy's series. This is the future of NASCAR, and I screwed up and not bought a charter when I could have bought one for $2 million. Now I'm going to be, I'll be the headline of Honda, and you know what?" People would love the hell out of them. And you know what? You would probably not have all that negative connotation about a manufacturer from Japan being in the sport American auto racing. All right. So how does that sound, Taz Taylor? Does that sound like a pretty good opening rant from last week? What's wrong?
Oh, yeah. That Junior one caught me off guard like, whoa.
That's on you. Do what, Taz?
Junior with Honda. Oh, boy, that would be the day. Now, I'm going to make a bold one here, Chris. Actually, it's not really so much bold if you're really thinking about it. I'm thinking if Honda comes into the sport, I would not be surprised if Legacy Motor Club jumps ship.
Jumps ship.
Well, maybe so. Maybe.
Because
maybe
Jimmy Johnson,
I believe the Honda.
Jimmy Johnson raced for Ganassi with Honda.
Yeah, that is true. That is true. Boy, what about a combination of Johnson and Junior together there, forefronting the Honda manufacturer? My goodness gracious, what two names would that be? Now let's talk about Legacy real quick. Eric Jones obviously had a fast race car this past weekend, and it seems to be that Legacy has improved so far over last season, right? But I believe some of our driver spotlights are actually Noah Gregson, which I kind of got confused there. Noah's actually in an SHR car now, and Carson Hocevar, who's in a Spire Motorsports car, and SVG, who has dabbed right now in the Xfinity Series. SVG is probably the most head-turner of them all, considering zero experience in the in racing, you know, NASCAR style. And I think he's got two top 10 finishes already this season.
You know something that's funny with Noah Gregson? He would be, and this is kind of, well, in a way it's shocking, but in a way it should not be. If Gregson did not get hit with that 35-point penalty, he would be the top SHR car in points right now.
Let's check out that real quick. Let's look at Noah's stats
We're talking about the 10 car. This is the car that Danica Patrick mm-hmm. in and completely bombed. This is the car that Eric Almirola apparently had so much potential in this 10 car, and apparently got mopped the floor. Yeah, he won a race or two, but pretty much still mopped the floor. This 10 car was pretty much arguably the third or the worst car in the SHR garage. All of a sudden, Noah Gregson hops in this ride, and the 10 car is competing to be the top ride of SHR.
Yeah, it is kind of strange, isn't it? So I'm trying to get this top 10 finishes so far this year. But the way that this thing is graphed out, let's see, 42 starts, 3-1 top.
And I know SHR has had a rough go, but I think I honestly believe, and I'm going to keep preaching this because I think they could be heading in the right direction. I think if they keep going with these four drivers that they currently have in Priest, Briscoe, Gregson, and Josh Berry, I think SHR in a few years, if they keep their cheating fingers out of things and not get penalized in points, I think we could see a resurgence of SHR and be top competitive team again.
Right.
I've been preaching that SHR right now is in this slump, and they're obviously, with the slump that they're in, it almost identically mirrors Hendrick when they were in the slump and were slowly getting younger drivers and the veterans were going. The difference SHR has this time around is that they had two veteran drivers leave at the exact same time. Hendrick lost Casey Kane, which brought in William Byron, basically, if I remembered right. Jeff Gordon went, brought in Chase Elliott. Dale Jr. went, brought in Alex Jimmy Johnson went, brought in Kyle Larson. Hendrick slowly rebuilt the program to where they are now. SHR.
Yeah.
Unfortunately, they were basically half the team is gone. We have to rebuild with half the team. Now the other half of the team is gone. Now we have to rebuild the whole team at one shot.
Right. Well, man, Noah Gregson showing some maturity there with all that he's went through. He actually said in the pre-race that he was in a happy place again. And that, you know, I've given Noah Gregson a lot of flack here on the radio show and throughout the years. You know, he's kind of irked my nerves from time to time. But obviously, you know, that he had to have been in a dark place last year and quickly watched his career become a big question mark, you know. We all knew that he would recover from it. I think I predicted Bass Pro Shops standing behind him along with Black Rifle Coffee, and that's exactly what's on the side of this race car. So, you know, to hear Noah say that he's, you know, in a happy place again and he feels like everything's all right, that's great. And Noah's been a help. What we've seen, the traces that we've seen of him at Junior Motorsports is who I believe that race car driver really is. a hard-nosed, gritty guy who's willing to drive the damn wheels off the race car and has a little bit of a personality behind him. Now, that personality sometimes becomes his kryptonite, you know. Sometimes it becomes, an issue for him because people don't like it or something to that effect. But look, when he comes out and when SH are struggling like they have been and puts in two top 10 finishes, it's obviously Noah has a little bit more talent than what he's been given credit for in the past. The one SHR driver that just continues to give me question marks week after week after week is a driver that we've been high on for several years. And I feel like we're so high now, we're smoking crack with this guy because obviously Ryan Preece has not done anything yet in a Cup Series car. And I'm surprised by that, Taz Taylor. I felt like Ryan Preece is in the category of Eric Jones, a future superstar of the sport, not just a future, semi-star, but a future superstar of the sport. And we can't get the guy out of the back of the racing field. I don't understand it.
The only spotlight I've seen from Ryan Preece, I think it was last year. I think it was the spring Martinsville race, and he was, like, right up front, and then I think he got involved in a wreck or had a mechanical failure or something, and it costed him the race. And it's in a way, it sucks because I feel like Ryan Preece, when he was in Gibbs, he was successful no matter what. And with his short track background, I feel like it maybe could be the next gen car. I could be wrong. I feel like he could have been more of a short track top contender easy with this next gen car. And it seems like it's not. And it's just weird because we've never seen him struggle this bad in the Xfinity series when he ran with Gibbs.
Right. Yeah, I mean, it's like, where did the real Ryan Preece go? One of the other guys we have on our spotlight here, Carson Hocevar. Hocevar has been kind of the red rose of Spire Racing. He's been, out of all the flack that's been kind of Carson Hocevar over the last few years, did he get brought up too quickly? Zane Smith, I think what people were expecting Zane Smith to have a little bit better start than Hocevar. But Hocevar has kind of been the lead guy there at Spire Motorsports. I don't see any top 10 finishes yet, but he's been high enough that he's gotten attention. He's been talked about. And I think that that's a great sign for where Carson Hocevar can be in the near future. Whether or not he's got the correct financial backing or whether or not he has the right, that they're in probably a Tier 2, Tier 3 Chevrolet team. You're only going to see bits and pieces of his talent throughout the year because of the tiers that they find themselves in with Spire. Obviously, Zane Smith has not been at all any eyebrow raiser. But Carson Hocevar, on the other hand, what are your thoughts? Is Carson Hocevar where you wanted him to be, a little bit before, a little bit after?
I think he's turned some heads. I think with him having limited races last year with Legacy when they were in Chevy, maybe helped him a bit for this year. Mm-hmm. I think Carson Hocevar, I think right now is at least exceeding a lot of people's expectations, if not exceeding more than what people thought, because not only is Hocevar basically a rookie with limited Cup racing experience and basically not transitioning from trucks to Xfinity then to Cup, he went from truck straight to Cup, pretty much. And Hocevar, when you put Spire on the map, you sit there and say, oh, Spire? Well, they pretty much run, top 25 at best. And I feel like we've, and not to take anything from Corey LaJoy, but Spire, honestly, if they were a two-car team right now, they probably could be like, and I know there's only like 14, 15 full-time teams, but I think Spire could be a top 10 competitive team with if it was just LaJoy and Josevar. When you add Zane Smith to the mix, and I don't like knocking him down, because Zane Smith, we have seen him succeed if you give him the equipment and the confidence. Zane Smith is a dangerous driver, and we have not seen much out of him to start the year.
Right. But remember, Taz Taylor, it's so hard to judge who the superstars are, because we didn't see much out of William Byron in a top-tier equipment. We hadn't seen much out of Christopher Bell in a top-tier equipment. But we have, right? And those guys are in top-grade equipment, and they've succeeded at the levels of expectation. These guys that are coming in tier two, tier three rides, we're not going to see the magnificence from them right from the beginning. First of all, the cameras at the racetracks won't even show these guys most of the time. I don't even know what car color Zane Smith had at Phoenix, because they never once even showed the freaking car. And that's, once again, bad broadcasting, bad camera videography. We got to fix it, man. We got to fix it, because it's more than just two cars in the field. But I'm going to save that for another day. I totally feel like these guys, that's why I want to bring this driver spotlight for, because it's up to us, Taz Taylor's media, to spotlight these guys, right? One of my favorite websites to go to is lastcar.com. It's because that guy, he always makes sure that he posts who the last place finisher was. And there's a complete stat line on who all's finished last place for the last, I think, 15, 20 years, maybe even, for lastcar.com. It's those guys that don't get talked about very much that I believe still deserve a little bit of attention, a little bit of hoorah, a little bit of a way to go, boys. And right now, you know, the ones that have turned my head is Noah Gregson, SVG, and Carson Hosevar this week. Now let's talk about SVG real quick. I think that he's moving along faster than expected, but I'm sitting here questioning myself, why the hell is this guy in an Xfinity car when he has understanding of the type of race car that we have in the Cup Series? Giving him an Xfinity ride is not going to help him become a better Cup driver. Do you agree or disagree with that statement?
Oh, boy. I feel like this could benefit SVG in terms of trying to understand the G-forces and understand the weight of a car, of the American stock cars versus an Australian V8 supercar. Because, I mean, I think of Australian, as many drivers would say, when you get into a different car, there's many different G-forces, many different aero type dynamics you got to worry about. There's all sorts of different factors. And yes, SVG has been a similar style car. If you just look at it, SVG has said on Dale Jr. Download that the V8 supercar is completely different than a NASCAR stock car, regardless if it's a Cup car or an Xfinity car. And I think with SVG starting with Xfinity at the time, I think will may benefit him. And I know you won't see it that way, Chris. Maybe with my point you will, but I think this could help SVG understand the G-forces of the stock car. What's the aerodynamics? How does tire wear? What's the weight of the car? Kind of like, I feel like those factors he needs to understand first, and I feel like Xfinity would be a great start. I think if he started in trucks, it would be a bad look, because I'm sorry, I love I used to love the Truck Series wholeheartedly, and with how it's become in the last year, two, maybe 3 years, it's been a complete abomination. It's literally a wreck fest. It's not even entirely fun to watch anymore.
Right.
So I feel like SVG starting
to agree with that.
And I believe SVG starting the Xfinity Series is literally a good starting point for SVG to understand what these NASCAR stock cars are all about in terms of weight, G-forces, aerodynamics, understanding the whole situation.
And don't get me wrong, Taz Taylor. I've told you for many years now that I believe the best racing is coming from the Xfinity Series. And I believe that.
Oh, definitely, for sure. I think the only bad race they had was Atlanta, and I just think the package Xfinity has for that track just doesn't fit.
Yeah. Yeah, it's definitely the funnest car to drive as well, and I've heard that from several different places, that the Xfinity car is the most fun car to drive out of all the NASCAR cars. So we've had news this week. Well, a couple of weeks ago, I guess, we missed it. Dale Jr. leaving NBC, that caused a big ripple. That caused a lot of stir. And there was some misinformation put out. I believe I might have shared that misinformation. I didn't know if the information was true or not. A lot of things I'd have read, it's not true. Of course, this was one of those things that wasn't true. But it sounded plausible. It sounded like it could happen. But it wasn't, and Dale Jr. come out and denied the fact that they were trying to run the broadcast from a studio in Charlotte, and that he had gotten yelled at. Obviously, I didn't really think that somebody yelled at Dale Jr., but it was quite the fuss, and it was a fun little deal to hang on to for about 24 hours before Jr. come out and squashed it all. But the eye-opener is Dale Jr. just left NBC, right? And so, hey, now Dale Jr., now go to Honda, right? Okay, can you listen to me? Now that you know how to jump out the cat box, let's just go ahead and do this and shove Chevrolet down the pipeline and let them be a hell to Hendrick, however they want to do. Did you catch that, hell to Hendrick?
So, never mind. I've been wanting to jump on this ever since you first mentioned Fox saying something, or no, doing something of shooting two cars and not really getting...
Yeah, go ahead. Please, tear into their ass.
Yeah, go ahead.
So
I listened
to part of his podcast, and he was explaining some of the stuff with NBC and where he wants to be with NASCAR broadcasting. When he explained with the NBC, yes, they wanted him to call the races from the Charlotte location, basically call the races remote. Dale Jr. said, if I continue to be a broadcaster in NASCAR, I want to be at the racetrack. He goes, I understand my job is to be the broadcaster, but I'm a fan too at the same time. He goes, I want to be at the racetrack. I want to call the race. He said it out loud. He goes, I've been talked to from NBC a few times, because I'm not calling the races how they want me to. He goes, but I'm a race fan. If I look out the window, I want to call the races as I'm looking out the window sometimes. If I see a battle that if there's nothing going on for the lead or second or third place, I'm out looking at the window as a race fan, looking to see where the battles are. He goes, if there's a battle that could be brewing up in the next two or three laps, from back at the 7th and 8th place spot, I'm going to look at it and I'm going to mention it, and I would like to have the broadcast, you know, cover that battle, because that could be heating up and something to talk about, something to give the fans, you know, and now
right.
fans something to talk about, something to give the drivers and sponsors, you know, some TV time. He goes,
right.
And honestly, at first, when I heard the news, I was like, wow, that's kind of surprising. I never would have thought that. Never would have seen Junior leave NBC. And then hearing Junior's side of it, I honestly don't blame the guy.
Right.
I would.
Well,
if I,
he'd come over to a ship
the,
that was already in, right?
Too.
And we can go over the NBC broadcast crews for the last 10 years. Kyle Petty, you know, I think Wally Dallenbach maybe. Then Jeff Burton come along and Steve Letarte. And, you know, that was kind of a comfortable situation for Junior. As if you go back to previous Dale Junior downloads, he talks about Jeff Burton kind of, you know, clipping his wings and helping him transition into, you know, a broadcaster there with NBC. This was an opportunity to carry the flight, to carry the crew, to carry the torch over to the streaming company and, I guess, CW. I think it was, Amazon and TNT or CW? What was the other? Because he signed with two different
I don't know if it was with CW. I can't think of what it was. I think Amazon was one. I can't think of the other one
right.
he was with.
Right, right.
But
so,
I mean,
you know, look, and he's gonna
hit
the ship there. Dale Jr. is a leader, Taz Taylor. He's a leader. That's what he does, right? He leads the group, and he's been put in a position now to where he can lead the group. And you know, he'll help these guys build a broadcasting team from the ground up. That's what he did with Dirty Mo Radio. He has experience doing it. What better guy to go out there and select and make sure that you are buying viewers? You know, everybody wants to go back to that Peacock playoff game, right? The Peacock playoff game, the one that everybody was like, this is going to be the biggest flop in the world because nobody's going to buy Peacock for one damn event, right? What happened? They put on the Kansas City Chiefs versus who? The Buffalo Bills. And what happened? More people bought the subscription than would even give TV ratings for on a typical game event, right? So that many people subscribed. Speaking of, we have a little bit of stat of the day ourselves that we'll get to real quick in just a second. Just hang on here real quick. You know, the highest views. People couldn't believe that many people tuned in to the Kansas City Chiefs and the Buffalo Bills game. But what it did, Taz Taylor, is it put us 10 years back, 20 years back now in the sporting world, because with that type of success, with us jumping to buy that subscription, now that they feel like they have bargaining ground. As long as they're bringing a good product, we're going to make sure that we have an Amazon Prime or a Netflix or whatever it is, whatever they decide to pony up to carry some of these races. They pretty much know, hey, the loyal fans, they will purchase this just to be able to watch. And having Dale Jr. as the head of their ship, big move. Like I said, let's rinse and repeat that with Honda. That way we can get another manufacturer in the sport. Honda would be crazy to not turn down Dale Jr. being their main guy, turning Junior Motorsports into the reality Cup Series team that everybody wants. Yeah, it would piss a few Chevrolet people off, but I was never a fan of Dale Jr. because he drove a Chevrolet. I was a fan of Dale Jr. because he was the son of an Earnhardt, and he literally had to go through hell in his career to be respected. And, yeah, he was given a whole lot in the beginning, but in the end they took it all back, and they treated him like dirt shit when he wasn't winning. And everybody was like, he doesn't deserve the name. And then he comes out and he comes back and he's a badass. And unfortunately, he got his head wrung too many times, and now we have the Dale Jr. that we have today. It literally pissed me off when Dale Jr. retired and didn't walk away from the sport. It literally made me cringe when I was hearing more about Dale Jr. after retirement than what I did during his racing career. Now I understand he's no longer a race car driver. He's a module. He's a mogul. He's the big guy. He is the head of the ship. He is NASCAR's Jesus. He is the NASCAR Jesus. And kudos to Junior. He deserves that. He's put in the hard work to become that. Now, as I said, Taz Taylor, and you can finish up on this one because we've got to get to the hot picks and whatnot. We're running out of time. But we also have a stat of the day. What's your thoughts, last thoughts? Good move, bad move? What do you think? Dale Jr. leaves NBC. Bad move for NBC, I say.
Oh, yeah, bad move for NBC. And regardless of wherever Dale Jr. goes for broadcasting, it's going to be a plus. I don't care if it's Fox. I don't care if it's Peacock. I don't care if it's Amazon. I don't care if it's some local Charlotte channel or whatever they're – oh, so Bristol. So I don't
people
care
gonna tune in.
If a local Bristol channel picks him up. It's huge for them because Dale Jr., yes, he has the name. You've got the name. You're going to get the attention. But what Dale Jr. is trying to do, and maybe you can see this in a way too there, Chris, in a different way, and maybe he is kind of that way. Think of Cody Rhodes and Triple H in the wrestling world. They're trying to revolutionize things and make things better to keep the viewership alive and keep that sport and entertainment, you know, alive and very populated. And Dale Jr. is just trying to do the same thing in NASCAR.
Right.
And,
right. His love
and
for the sport.
If nobody wants to speak it, he will. And the one
all he ever wanna do is race.
I would not be surprised if Dale Jr. and I'm not saying Dale Jr. is not made for TV broadcast. I think he definitely is. But I think Dale Jr. could probably succeed more in the broadcasting world for NASCAR if he was a radio broadcaster for MRN or PRN. They probably would let him have the freedom to do what he wants.
Yeah. Dale Jr., yeah, open the gates up, man. Drop the red carpet. You know, you're going to be successful. Tie into it. Look, Honda, do you hear what we're saying? Go get Dale Jr. Don't worry about what Chevrolet thinks about it, and all he can do is tell you no. But if you give him the moon and the stars and four charters, I guarantee you, Junior Motorsports just went up to 40 million, 80 million. What, 40 times 4 is $160 million just for charters. I guarantee you that's half of Dale Jr.'s net worth. So, yeah, if you can increase his net worth by half, go ahead, Honda. Promise him those four charters, and you'll have yourself a pretty badass race team. As for Amazon, I can't wait. I'll be tuning in. I can't wait till all this stuff winds up on one kind of subscription. Give me NASCAR live stream now, and I want every damn thing. I want qualified. I want garage. I want to see the haulers. I want in-car camera from the haulers during the parade. I want the entire network to show nothing but replays of NASCAR races for the entire week until it's time for the next live broadcast. I want
the
that,
one
and
thing
we had that with Speed to an extent, but we don't have anything like that now other than YouTube.
The one detail we did miss hitting on with Dale Jr. on this is that he will not be in a broadcast booth for the 2024 NASCAR season. He will be back starting in 2025.
We'll just see if him and his beautiful wife announce a future child here in the next couple of months. So we'll just see if that happens. Which just says he's got a little bit of time off. All right, Taz Taylor, we have blown through the news today. I do think that we did miss a topic here talking about Dodger Stadium, NASCAR looking into Dodger Stadium to possibly race a race there. I don't know if you have an opinion on that. I really don't have an opinion, and it's not an opinion that I hadn't already expressed many times. I would love to see NASCAR show up at Yankee Stadium. I would love to see NASCAR show up at Dodger Stadium. I think that would be really cool. If they want to stay in the California network, I did suggest Bakersfield, California. I think that that would be a great track. It's a short track. They can only fit about 15,000 people in the stands. Oh, yeah, Irvindale. That's, yeah, in Bakersfield. Yeah, Irvindale. Yeah, thank you. I was saying the name wrong. Irvindale is the name of the racetrack there in Bakersfield. It's, you know, the former home track of Kevin Harvick, right? There's been several California kids come out of that very racetrack there. If we go to North Wilkesboro and we've gone to St. Louis, let's go to Irvindale. Let's see what we can do there and get a cool race out of that or something. If not, definitely Iowa Raceway should be considered a West Coast swing. It's far enough out west. Whether or not we can race there in February, I'm not sure. I think the weather's still pretty bad in that area, so I don't know if that would work. But, you know, they're looking for a West Coast racetrack, and that's going to be typically hard in February. So As I said, Irwindale would be a great place. Maybe you agree with that since you're the one that brought that the name to my attention. But outside of that, anything else, Taz Taylor, that we might have missed? Let's get to the – if not, let's get to the stat of the day.
No, I don't think I have anything to really hit on. I mean, it would be interesting to see Dodger Stadium. But I'm not going to jump ship until we know more details about it. But anyways, stat of the day, Fox TV got 4.028 million viewers for Sunday's NASCAR Cup Series race at Phoenix, which is up 19% from 3.389 million last year, and the most watched sports event of the weekend. Last year's Phoenix race went up against the March Madness Men's Basketball Selection Show and the PGA Players Championship.
Yeah,
19%,
that's big. I mean, a 20% increase. Right, 20% increase, you know, and that was a fall-off. People expected Las Vegas to kind of bring a negative context because of the two weekends before being super speedway racing style, which gets a lot of passing, a lot of action on the racetrack. Of course, last week was kind of a snooze fest at Vegas. Larson, the winner. We hate doing shows after Larson wins because there's nothing stinkier than watching a guy who has zero personality, crown the dirt track Jesus, and just stinks up the damn show. And, you know, basically he won every stage and everything. Like, no wonder Taz Taylor has such a damn jump on everybody right now in point standings. My God. Kyle Larson basically swept the freaking weekend, you know, in Cup Series points so last week. So, you know, we're all going to have to dig a little bit harder. But to see a 20% increase, 19% increase, I understand that, you know, racing wasn't up against March Madness and stuff like the year before. But, look, people want to say Phoenix is this and Phoenix is that, but what everybody's refusing to see is the ratings are up and the place sells out. So, obviously, there's something right about Phoenix, and I don't think the racing was that bad. So, I hate that 59% of the people that watched in a 20% increase did not like what they were watching. That kind of counter-affects the statistic that 59% of people didn't like the race, but yet we've seen a 20% increase. So, that is kind of weird to kind of balance that out. Where the numbers really are, I'm not sure. But we've got Taz Taylor – Hot Picks coming up now.
All right, and I'm going to defend my case. Like Chris said earlier about my jump on points, I'm just saying I've always looked at odds, and I've looked at my – and I always look at my stats because you people should know I look at my stat sheet. And look, I see it as whatever driver can look to be the guy that can get me the most points is who I'm going to go with. And, yeah, I did have Kyle Larson for Las Vegas, and arguably so. But you know what? Not only did it give me a correct pick, it also got me points, but I also looked at Atlanta and saw, okay, Ryan Blaney runs well at Atlanta and Super Speedway. I'm going to throw him in. And I did the same thing with Phoenix. Ryan Blaney, he didn't get a top five run. Was he a top five car? Oh, yeah, he was. He got shuffled in a little late scuffle with like 30 or 40 laps, and it was just too much to overcome. But
yeah.
I put myself in a situation of where can I score the most points and who's going to get me there?
No harm, no foul. You know, I chose one of your favorites last week in William Byron, and I bit the bullet, finished in 18th. So, you know, sometimes we got it, sometimes we don't. I didn't anticipate the Toyota dominance. Of course, I see Hamlin on the list, Bush. Bush had a terrible race at Phoenix. I'm seeing some of the names, Reddick as a contender. Buescher is an underdog, so good job on that one.
Jones was strong, so good job on that one. You know, you win some, you lose some. So this week, I see on your favorites list, you have Bush, Hamlin, and Larson.
Yes, I do. I can elaborate
Hamlin
on that. Larson.
Yeah.
Larson
Hamlin?
Has. So, all right,
Hamlin?
Hold on. We'll get there. Hold on. Larson has the second best average finish amongst current cup drivers right now. One win, five top fives, 10 top tens in 15 races. So he finished outside the top 10 only five times. Again, average finish of 12.1, which is the second best of active cup drivers. Next down the list with Kyle Busch and Denny Hamlin. Kyle Busch has eight wins at this track, which I believe is the most of any current Cup Series driver right now. I can't knock that out. Denny Hamlin has finished inside the top 10 around 50% of the time. In 33 Bristol races, he's won three times, 10 top fives, 17 top 10. He's gotten four poles at Bristol, and his average finish is 13.9, which is the same average finish as the eight-time Bristol winner, Kyle Busch.
Wow. Yeah, no doubt Kyle Busch is probably the top of the list here at this racetrack. But explain Hamlin.
I pretty much did.
You know, I think that this is a recurrence from last year, and I feel like I heard the exact same words from you last year. I'm just not sold on Hamlin. There's several other drivers that I feel come to mind on a favorites list. I'm not even sure Hamlin is even the best Toyota driver anymore. I think that Christopher Bell is knocking on that door. I feel like Tyler Reddick's knocking on that door. I feel like the future of Toyota is not the same old of Martin Truex Jr. and Denny Hamlin. It's now the kids, right? This is the kids' universe.
So that's the three favorites I have listed. Contenders, I've listed Brad Keselowski, Christopher Bell, and Chase Elliott. Chase Elliott could probably fall in the favorites category, but what's making me keep him off there is that he is...
Ow!
It, well, what's keeping me...
Like 38 races.
Hold on. Don't jump the gun on me here.
Okay, my bad.
Chase Elliott, I listed him as a contender, but what's keeping me from putting him on the favorites category is the zero column on the win list. He has not won a Bristol race. However, he has the best average finish of current cup drivers right now. 13 Bristol races. Again, zero wins, four top fives, seven top tens with one pole. His average start, and this is only one of a very select few, who has an average start of inside the top 10 and can pretty much keep it there for his average finish. But again, I'm listing him as a contender. If he had one, maybe two races in there, I could easily put him, I could make an argument and put him in as a favorite.
Right. No, we're going to leave those there because I definitely, as you know, we've forgotten so far about Chris Buescher, you know, and I think that Chris had a really good finish here. RFK seems to be on the up and up. This is one of the racetracks where RFK has thrived at. And, you know, coming off three wins last year for Buescher. I believe this is one of those tracks that he won at. So I would definitely, Taz Taylor, have to add Chris Buescher to the favorites list. Now, that favorites list is probably going to get
contender.
Small.
I'll put him as a contender.
You would put Chris Buescher, one of the top 10 drivers in NASCAR right now. You would just throw him as a contender with Chase Elliott, who hasn't won a race in 38 races?
You're putting it that way, but we're heading to Bristol. Bristol's a different animal than saying Chase Elliott hasn't won in 38 races.
Mm-hmm. Okay. All right. Well, knock him in there in the contender list.
I mean, yes, Chris Buescher has one win at this track and only 10 and three top fives to go with it. But there's
three top fives.
But right now, with how RFK is building, I think that I think RFK is an easy, solid contender. I mean, Brad Keselowski, we could have thrown in the favorites category because he's won at Bristol three times and has finished in the top 10. He has six top fives and nine top 10. So, I mean, we could throw him as a favorite, but when you look at those three numbers in comparison to how many Bristol starts, you don't really want to put him in as a really solid favorite. Although,
that begs to differ only because he was in crap equipment before he come to RFK. So you have to base the stats off of what RFK is now.
Although, I would not be surprised if we see a Ford rebound, and this is kind of where I'm going to go with this next driver who could go in this favorite list, who has multiple wins in this track. And I know he's struggled so far this year.
There he's a gunner.
There you go.
Huh?
He's won multiple times at Bristol. He runs pretty well at Bristol as well. So, I mean, and Joey Logano, we know Joey Logano. If he's having a bad start, you know he's going to turn around as soon as possible. When he turns it around, he's a bullet that can't be missed.
All right, so that has to leave me back to Ryan Blaney. Ryan Blaney's not on the contender or the favorite list, and I feel like Ryan Blaney maybe, though, against my better judgment, I think that he may be one of the top drivers in NASCAR right now. Obviously, Vegas feels the same way. They are giving him a plus 900 with Brad Keselowski right in front of him with a plus 1,100. So
I can see him being a contender for Bristol this week. I mean, his stats almost identically mirror Chase Elliott's, but his average finish is I don't want to say substantially worse, but pretty worse than Chase Elliott's.
Yeah. And I feel like I'm the new Craig Moore on this show because I feel like last several times through hot picks, I've had to clearly bring up the fact that Chastain is not on this damn list. Why not Chastain? The guy gets no respect. He's the Rodney Dangerfield of NASCAR.
See, my problem with Chastain, I've never seen Chastain be one to talk about when it comes to short tracks. I don't know if it's something with him and short tracks that just don't mix. He doesn't like racing them, or he just has terrible luck. I mean, he only has one top 10 at Bristol. That's it. He hasn't even led a single lap.
That's the stats. You know, that's what the stats are saying. How about, you know, let's go. First of all, Tyler Reddick, is he on this list? Hold on, because I've got another guy by the name of Ty Gibbs, and I want to make sure Reddick gets where he's supposed to go. But Ty Gibbs is slowly but surely inched his way on our list about every week now. This is kind of reminds me of last year when we were kind of uncertain about where RFK was, but we wanted to make sure that we were given, you know, respect where respect was due. I'm not a Ty Gibbs fan by no means. I think that he's, you know, the pacifier of Gibbs Racing, right? Of Joe Gibbs Racing. So, but he has had moments moments of brilliance, moments of brightness. He looks like he may be figuring it out. Does Ty Gibbs belong on this list? Because, believe it or not, Vegas feels like he belongs on this list.
Oh, he rightfully does.
I like that, Taz Taylor. Now tell me why.
So, in two cup races at Bristol, he has one top five, one top ten. He has led 102 laps at Bristol. I am perfectly okay with throwing Ty Gibbs in there. And I know people can make the argument for a contender, but right now, until I see more serious, like, true contendership come out of him, and I'm not saying he won't, because by the looks of it, it seems like he's picking up the pace and maturing and really starting to compete. I think I can put him as an underdog, and I would not be surprised if he ends up finishing inside the top 10.
Yeah. All right. Well, and so once again, Tyler Reddick should probably be somewhere on this list.
Tyler Reddick has literally the same top five and top 10 stats as Ty Gibbs and has five Bristol starts.
Okay.
Only difference between Reddick, Ty Gibbs, is Reddick has not led a lap at Bristol.
Okay. So let's throw some underdogs out there real quick. I've got about four of them. All right, and one of them always seems to make this list, Bubba Wallace. The other one is Eric Jones.
Eric Jones has made the list.
Eric Jones did make the list. Okay, Michael McDowell and Chase Briscoe. So that would be between Bubba Wallace.
Bubba McDowell.
And we've got Martin Truex Jr., who's probably going to win the race, but let's just imagine Martin Truex Jr. is already retired. So we've got Bubba Wallace, Michael McDowell, Chase Briscoe. Who makes the list and who doesn't?
All right, so McDowell has two top tens and 24 starts, has yet to lead a lap. Bubba Wallace has one top 10 and 9 starts, but has led 6 laps. And you said Chase Briscoe. I thought I saw his name pop up somewhere. I'm literally looking at this. Oh, Briscoe has yet to even record a top 10 finish.
Wow. Check the stats real quick for Austin Dillon, would you please? I don't know why, but just check the stats. I'm sorry. Vegas is making it very tempting with a plus 20,000 there. It's just... The guy's got a lot of experience. I want to know where he stands.
17.7 average finish, has yet to lead a lap. However, he has one top five and three top tens in 17 starts.
Never led a lap in 8-9 year career at Bristol. That's sad. All right. Well, we left Bubba Wallace. I mean, Alex Bowman.
I'm putting Bubba Wallace on.
Okay. All right. Well,
we may have one favorite short on this list, but Bristol, unfortunately, it's like Bristol is one of these tracks where you are either good at it or you're just terrible.
Yeah. Do you think that one of these lower tier cars that they actually have a legitimate chance, maybe Ricky Stenhouse or which one are we missing? What are we missing on the contender or the underdog?
No, we're missing one on the favorite side. We have contenders and underdogs all filled up.
Well, what about, where's Blaney? Is Blaney in the favorites?
Blaney's in the contender.
Okay. Blaney's in the contender. Denny Hamlin, Christopher Bell. Christopher Bell is in the contender?
Yep.
Yeah. All right. So we're missing a favorite. I guess that would be Martin Truex Jr., man. Let's give credit where credit's due. Huh?
Nah.
No love to Martin Truex. 10-4.
I'm okay with four favorites. I'm okay with that.
I'm okay with it, too. I'm okay with it. It's fine. All right. Well, Taz Taylor, we somehow got it done in record time fashion. We still got 20 minutes on a two-hour show. But I feel like we covered everything we needed to cover here tonight. We wanted to cut the show back by at least 20 or 30 minutes. We got it in 20-minute time. I went a little bit over in the rant at the beginning of the show, put us a little bit behind, but all in all, a great show. There was no pause. I feel like we took as much air as we could, and we put it all there. Look, man, you're making this year so damn easy, man. I never thought that it would be so easy for two people to carry a show for an hour and a half. I really thought there would be a lot of stumbling, a lot of trying to figure out what we were going to talk about. But Taz Taylor, we have trained you well here at the 110 Nation. You seem to take these few little topics, and we're able to make a show out of it, and that's amazing because we didn't cover much. We just covered all the important shit. Like, there's still a whole lot more that we could talk about that goes on throughout the race week, but between you and I, we covered the most important topics here tonight, and that's all that matters. So, Taylor, thank you once again for your dedication and hard work throughout the week to make this show what it is. I believe it is about that time for us to sign off for the night, man. First of all, I do want to say we are racing this weekend. Our season opens up. Why Not Motorsports Park will be open for business Friday for practice. Saturday, we kick off the season with the Battle of the States. Whole lot of money. There's a whole lot of new series that are involved that are going to be there. I think we have a crate racing series that's going to be there, along with several others. We're going to be racing late 604s, 602 Sportsmen, late models. We're going to be racing factory stocks, street stocks, modifieds, and the enduro cars. So if you're anywhere around the Mississippi area, come on out to one of the top 10 racetracks in the nation. Why Not Motorsports Park, as Rodney Wing will tell you, be there. Taylor, close it out, my friend.
All right. We want to thank everyone for listening along to Race Chat Live tonight. If you ever miss us live on Blog Talk Radio, you can always catch us on any form of podcast, such as Blog Talk Radio, iHeartRadio, Spotify, Google Podcast, Apple Podcast, you name it, we're pretty much on it. Just search the 110 Nation, and you'll find us, our Tuesday night shows. You'll find the 110 Nation Sports Show that happens on Wednesday nights with Mr. CJ Sports and Mario from Carolina Sports Plus. Soon we'll be getting back with Safety 2 Success. That'll be Jared on Thursday nights. And who knows, maybe we could bring back our Race Chat Live 110 Nation exclusives that happen on Monday nights as well, where Chris and Jason interview either our driver or somebody who works in the sports world and sit down and chat with them for half an hour, give them the spotlight.
Look, I've got three interview prospects right now that I know are ready to come on. I need three more, and we'll do a 6-part series once again of the exclusive. But I need three more guys to interview. I've got Carl Long on the list. I've got Kenny Carroll out of Missouri, a dirt track driver. Of course, Carl Long. Everybody knows Carl's story. We've had him on as past guest before. I would like to sit down and have another exclusive, a real exclusive with Carl Long, and one other guest. So if I can get three more, I think we'll be ready to sign off on our next 110 Nation Race Chat Live exclusive. Where can you find the podcast at, Taz Taylor?
I mentioned it before, but you can always find us on iHeartRadio, Blog Talk Radio, Spotify, Apple Podcasts, Google Podcasts. Basically, if you can think it, or you can name it, we're pretty much there. Find us, just search the 110 Nation, and you'll have pretty much found us. Of course, you can also catch clips of our shows on our YouTube channel. Go over to our 110 Nation Sports YouTube channel and subscribe there. If you're new to us and want to get a glimpse of what our shows are like, you can always watch those little clips. Or if you don't want to listen to our full shows and want to listen on certain topics of our shows, that's what the shorts are for, to kind of help you get tuned in and get our lucky 2 cents of the topic. Anyways, we want to see you folks next Tuesday night, same bat time, same bat place, 8:30 p.m. Eastern. And, of course, get those picks in for the pool. And good luck to everybody, and see you all next Tuesday night. This has been the Caution Flag Racing Radio, Chris Creighton, and I'm the Tasmanian Devil Flaggers, Taz Taylor. We'll see you next week.
Yes, sir. All right, Taz Taylor. Thank you. Bye-bye.